If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Hi, I'm Ben Parker from The Bulwark. Welcome back to the Bulwark Takes Feed and Command Post. I'm joined, as always, by our very own Lieutenant General Mark Hertling. General, thanks for joining me.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Ben. And we're doing this again on Monday because there's so much going on right now.
Yeah, we've got to start with the breaking news, which is we are praising our friends and threatening to bomb our allies. This just happened. President Trump was giving an interview, and someone asked him about the role Oman has played in the negotiations with Iran and the United States over the Strait of Hormuz. I know you know a lot about Oman. You've been there. I'll just summarize and say that President Trump said, if Oman doesn't play ball, we're going to bomb the shit out of them.
Right. He was asked by Trey Yangst on Fox News how Oman's negotiation with Iran was going, and it looked like they might be concluding a deal between the two of them to open the straits and do the northern route going into the strait and the southern route going out, northern being the Iranian side and the southern part being the Omani side. And he basically answered the question, what do you think about this, by saying, if Oman gets in the way, we're going to bomb the shit out of him. Just
real
like you
quick,
said.
General, we have the clip. I think we should play it real quick.
No, I think we should. Yeah, let's do it.
President says they're good poker players, but they're dying, and that the midterms have nothing to do with my thinking. This is all moving very quickly in the region because there is a U.S. military posture that remains, and there are a lot of different players involved and talks that are taking place as we speak right now between Iran and Oman about control of the Strait of Hormuz. And the president says if Oman gets in the way, we'll bomb the S out of them. Because at the end of the day, the president wants two clear things here. He wants control of the Strait of Hormuz. There is an ongoing U.S. naval blockade that is costing the Iranian regime hundreds of millions of dollars each day. And if ultimately this leads to future negotiations, that is when Iran's nuclear program is expected to be discussed.
All right, so we're going to bomb Oman, I guess.
Well, first, can I comment on the excitement in Trey Yink's voice? I mean, he is really fired up about this.
I just turned my volume down a couple clicks while we were watching that.
Yeah. It is interesting because Oman and the United States have had a relationship since 1833. They were the first country in the Middle East that we actually formed a partnership with. And it was during a different time, but those relationships have improved over time. In 1980, we signed a treaty with them, basically a friendship pact is what it was. But Ben, you being the historian and the national security expert that you are, you know that that particular country on the southern side of the Strait of Hormuz has had some influence in, the Iran-Iraq war, where we were sending things, and during the tanker wars of the 1987 timeframe during Reagan administration. They have basing airfields and port facilities that are phenomenal. I haven't been to Oman a lot. I've been there one time. Muscat is a beautiful capital city with a lot of history. From the Portuguese days up to the Arab days, but they help the United States a lot. They send their officers to our schools like Leavenworth and the war colleges, and they are considered a partner. What the president was seemingly upset about is what sometimes gets in the way of Oman, because they have friendships with both Washington and all the other Middle Eastern countries, but they also maintain a relationship with Iran. They're one of the few countries in the Middle East that can do communications between the Gulf states and this somewhat theocratical nation of Iran. So they're very valuable. And why we would bomb this ally is beyond my best guess.
You're right. I did know all of that, excuse me, about Oman because you sent me a bunch of notes right before we started recording. That's how I learned it all.
Good. Okay.
And you had a bunch of things about more recently. We've expanded our cooperation. We have full access to their bases and ports. We, you know, station troops there. It's a very strategic location because of, you know, it's a place where our ships can go. There's a deep water port that isn't along the Strait of Hormuz. I guess this is just the president's frustration. And I guess he figures if I don't like someone, I can threaten to bomb them. But that's never worked for him, has it?
No. But and the other thing I'll add to all this is we were doing this special version of Command Post to talk about Korea. And as we were preparing for it, this one came over the air. And it's like, oh, my gosh. So you're bombing our friends. You're threatening our allies with basically, we're not going to play with you anymore with our exercises, which are exceedingly important. And we can talk about that in a second. And it would appear that it's not just these two nations that are affected, because threatening Oman is going to make all of the countries in the Middle East scratch their head. Threatening Korea is going to make all the countries in Asia scratch their head, especially countries like Japan and Australia and New Zealand and all of the ASEAN nations. We've already sort of caused all of our European allies to scratch their head when we threatened to take over Greenland and make Canada our 51st state. So I guess what I'm saying is it wouldn't, I guess our alliances wouldn't be harmed any more clearly if we had a plan to do it than these things that are just happening with casual references by the president of the United States.
I do think we have to talk more about South Korea after we play a quick ad, but I just wanted to say one more thing about Oman first so we can finish up on this topic. One of the things that I heard someone say early on in the Iran war that I thought was very smart and I've repeated several times in Command Post is that the problem with Iran's strategy in the war seemed to be, we'll just go to war with everyone at the same time. And if we get attacked, not only will we attack the United States, and not only will we attack Israel, who are attacking us, but also we'll launch missiles and drones at Jordan and Iraq and Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and the UAE and everyone else. And I thought, well, sure, that's, you know, that is very bad for us and that's scary and their capability of doing all that is alarming. But as a long-term strategy, alienating almost every single one of your neighbors is rarely a good idea, especially doing it all at the same time. But that's sort of what we're doing now too, is we're going around the world and we're alienating all of the countries that like us and that we trade with and that we cooperate with. And it's like, okay, like if you really want to trade the American alliance system for North Korea, you can do that. It's not a good trade.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, in terms of going back to Iran and they're pissing off all of their neighbors, this isn't something that's just now happening. I mean, they've been pissing off their neighbors for a couple of decades now with their approach to government and their approach to international relations and oil. The one thing I think they did as part of their strategy to strike the nations in the regions where all of them were nations that supported the U.S. in the area. Mm-hmm. So they conducted missile strikes and drone attacks against all of the countries that support U.S. bases in the region. And this is similarly familiar with what Al-Qaeda wanted to do. They wanted to drive the United States out of the Middle East, because that is the Holy Land. It just is confounding to me, Ben. It gets back to what you just said. We couldn't do it any better if we had a unique plan. We are really affecting our alliances, and many of them right now are starting to turn to some of our enemies, or at least our competitors like China. I don't know what is going to happen as this bubbles up with the South Korean let's stop the exercise standpoint, because there are more countries involved in that exercise than just the United States and Korea. You know, having been on these exercises before, you look around the command post and there are Australians, New Zealanders, Vietnamese, Filipinos. I mean, every nation in the region is involved in this, because they all know, like they did in the 1950s, they would all have to come to the support of South Korea if North Korea started attacking them.
Let's move on to South Korea, Edward, and talk more about that and the excellent article you wrote about it for us right after we play this ad.
This message is sponsored by Function. So August is National Wellness Month, and it feels like every wellness trend you see online comes with another gadget or a supplement that you're supposed to buy. I wanted to skip the guesswork and actually see what was going on inside my body. I want to know my baseline health before busy travel season, and Function gave me a way to do just that. Through Function, you get a set of tests that looks at more than just the basics. Their core biomarkers include white blood cell count, which actually maps your frontline immune defense, hsCRP, which can identify inflammation, and vitamin D and zinc, which are important for immune function and are commonly low. They also cross-reference things like ferritin for iron levels, MMA for active B12, and cortisol to understand how stress is affecting your body. And let's be honest, I got a lot of stress. I do the trio, I do the takes, constantly editing. It's stressful. I need to know how it's affecting my body. So I use Function, and you should too. I like having more information about what's happening inside my body so I can make more informed decisions. Check your health the way I do. Function provides 160 plus lab tests for $1 a day and member pricing on advanced imaging. Join at functionhealth.com/bulwarktakes and use gift code bulwarktakes25.
All right, General, with a preemptive apology here, I'm just going to rehearse the story, and I'm sorry, I'm going to read the whole Trump post real quick.
Can I just say one thing first, Ben, as a caveat to everything I'm going to say?
Yeah.
In the late 1990s, as a brigade commander, I would go back and forth to Korea because that was our mission. We reinforced the 2nd Infantry Division. I will use multiple terms for the exercise that's going on. When we were doing it, it was called Ulti Focus Lens, which makes no
back
sense
in
at
the
all.
Day.
It, back in the day. It changed to, I think,
Ulti Freedom Guardian.
Guardian, yeah. But that stopped in 2018. And now it's Ulti Freedom Shield, USF 26. So if I get my nomenclatures all screwed up, let's warn the audience. That's why I'm doing it. I'm an old man and I can't remember things.
It's all the same exercise. They just changed the name.
Exactly.
Okay, so here is what the President of the United States posted yesterday evening. Based on my very good relationship with Kim Jong-un of North Korea, I am not happy with the fact that the United States has, long ago, agreed to participate in joint military exercises with South Korea. These exercises are not only costly, with much of these costs paid for by the United States of America, as usual, but send a signal that is totally inappropriate and hostile to a country that, as long as Donald J. Trump has been president, has been unthreatening and respectful. Therefore, and based on the fact that it is too late to cancel, I've instructed Secretary of War Pete Hegseth to substantially reduce the joint military exercises. While somewhat unrelated, I recently asked the President of South Korea if they would like to join us in the denuclearization of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and they said, no thanks. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Trump. Oh, man.
Let's point out some obvious things first, Ben.
Yeah, let's go through, yeah.
The exercises are costly, and most of those costs are not paid by the United States. We pay for our own operations there. And besides, the country of South Korea also gives us basing rights and provides quite a bit of support. The second thing, the country that is allegedly unthreatening and respectful, meaning North Korea, has been continuously threatening and disrespectful to not only the United States, but to other countries in the region. And it's not somewhat unrelated. I think it's directly related to the fact that South Korea said, no thanks, we're not going to participate in the war against Iran. So let's just clarify those three very important parts of this message.
Oh, that doesn't even scratch the surface of all the stupidity that's going on here. I mean, let's go. So first of all, you participated in some exercises like these. He posted that the day before the exercises were scheduled to begin. They are, I don't know exactly the time difference,
today.
But if they haven't begun already, they are beginning very soon. How much money are we really saving by shipping everyone over to South Korea and then telling them, oh, don't do anything. Just sit tight for a minute.
Well, I'll just tell you a little bit. When the brigade I commanded at Fort Lewis, Washington would go over for these exercises, we would do different approaches to training, things that we weren't quite sure of. And that's the purpose for any exercise, to kind of polish the diamonds and make sure you don't make any mistakes. So the first year I went, we did the deployment of our equipment to a roll-on, roll-off platform, a ro-ro ship, as they call it. And that was our major effort to see how we would transport an armored brigade of 9,000 soldiers and about 800 or 900 pieces of equipment, to include 70-ton tanks, how we would get them on a ship in the port of Seattle, take them across the Pacific, land in Busan, unship them on a roll-on, roll-off, and then move toward the demilitarized zone on the roads. So I would allow you to estimate what the cost of something like that would be and how much in preparation that would be occurring before the start date of the exercise, which is today. So, you know, I'll tell you, as a brigade commander, we would work for months setting this up and preparing for this kind of an exercise.
It's totally silly. We wrote about this in Morning Shots this morning. By the way, if you're not aware of the Bulwark's Morning Shots newsletter, 5 days a week, news roundup. It is totally free. It's really good. I'm also the editor of the Morning Shots newsletter. Andrew Egger and Bill Crystal are the main writers. It's fantastic. Go sign up at thebulwark.com. And again, it's totally free. 5 days a week. Best morning newsletter you can sign up for. Just a few more things we wrote about. One is, Trump says North Korea is unthreatening and respectful. Here is how the former DIA director, General Jeffrey Cruz, described it to Congress just last year. North Korea is in its strongest strategic position in decades, possessing the military means to hold at risk U.S. forces and U.S. allies in Northeast Asia while continuing to improve its capability to threaten the U.S. homeland. And they also just fired it off another test ballistic missile just a couple weeks ago. So, I don't know. Maybe Trump thinks that North Korea isn't threatening to him, but it's certainly threatening to the United States. And even if it weren't threatening to the United States, is this the kind of country that we want to have a good relationship with?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. And by the way, let's talk about Lieutenant General Jeff Cruz, who was asked to retire from the director of the Defense Information Agency. Jeff was asked to resign because he was so bad that the day after President Trump said that they had obliterated all the nuclear facilities in Iran.
This is after Operation Midnight Hammer, yeah.
One day, the next day, because it takes a couple of days to assess those, he said, well, I can't say that they were obliterated. That was his big mistake. He was asked to retire because of that. Obviously, they weren't obliterated, or we wouldn't have had this six-month war we've been going through over the, you know, for the last half year. But going back to North Korea, for anyone who has served on the peninsula or has worked with the South Koreans, you will know that Kim Jong-un he is one of the worst dictators in the world, because he uses his people. There have been elements of starvation in North Korea in the late 1990s, early 2000s. There were close estimates of 3 million people who had starved to death. People were eating bark off of trees. I have a personal issue with North Korea, because when I was a young cadet at West Point, the coach of our water polo team was actually a captain, Art Boniface, who went to Korea on a tour. And in the mid-1970s, he was the captain that was assassinated by North Korean soldiers in the tree cutting incident.
Whoa.
And there is now a Camp Boniface named after him on the border with North Korea, where, you know, the UN troops actually serve. And in fact, when Trump walked over the wall to shake hands with Kim Jong-un in his first term, that was at Camp Boniface, named after the guy that was killed by the North Koreans with an axe because he was trimming a tree so they could get a better view of North Korea. This is the society we're dealing with in North Korea.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. And it is a huge shame. Literally a shame. It is a shame on our country that this is what our leader is doing. You wrote an article about this whole thing very quickly, based on your experience and your knowledge of the region. Canceling military exercises hurts us, not our enemies. at thebulwark.com now. And the thing you really focused on is the reason we do these exercises, what we get out of them, why they help American national security, and what canceling or nearly all but canceling them the way Trump is doing, what that really costs. So why don't you run us through that if you could?
Well, you know, it costs the preparedness to work with an ally who might become attacked by the North Koreans. It helps us gain an understanding of the land, the people, the culture, the military, and not just, you know, the culture of the country, but the culture of their military. You know, I was stationed at Fort Lewis, Washington, which is just right outside of Seattle in Tacoma. We trained at Yakima Training Ground, which is a high desert environment. We were tested at the National Training Center in the Mojave Desert. The first time I saw Korea with my tank brigade, I was amazed at the terrain features and how the Koreans fought their war and the equipment they used and the kinds of threats that they faced. It was not something until you're there that you understand. The ravines, the severe mountains, the severe weather. We were there in the summer and in the very tough winter that any Korean veteran from the 1950s would tell you about. The frozen Chosin, as they say. We visited there in January just to see the Chosin Reservoir in terms of what it was like in the 1950s. So these are all the things you learn, and you can't learn them from books, Ben. This is why the military trains with our allies consistently and constantly, so you can get a feel for how they work, they get a feel for how you work. And in the case of Korea, it's even more interesting because the 2nd Infantry Division, which I was once a part of, now has a relationship with Korean forces where they have Korean brigades as part of the 2nd U.S. Infantry Division. They call them KATUSAs. Korean augmentees to the United States Army. So you literally have Korean soldiers within your rank. And as a commander, I want to know those guys. So these are all the reasons that we conduct these kind of exercises, as well as polishing the things like deployments, communications, understanding that radio networks don't work. You got to have higher antennas in the mountains. I could give you a million things that are different about fighting in Korea than about fighting at our National Training Center in California or on the plains of Europe or in Ukraine or in the Middle East. They're all different. And that's why we train so hard in the U.S. military.
Yeah, the president seems to think it's about, like, we're paying the South Koreans to practice and they're not paying. No, it's, we're training our own troops. That's why it costs money. Because we're anyway, we have a great question in the chat. Thank you to Matt for highlighting it. Andrew asks, is this really about desperately shifting resources to the Gulf? It's an interesting question. And I think sort of at a technical level, my guess is no. But at a policy level, maybe sort of. What do you think?
Well, I think from a tactical level, the answer is clearly yes. Because we're running out of money in the Gulf and we're running out of equipment in the Gulf. And we're shifting resources from one theater to another. And that's perfectly exemplified by the replacement of the USS Abe Lincoln with the USS George Washington. The George Washington is stationed in Yokosuka, Japan. That's where their home base is. That's where their families live. So you're now taking the one carrier that's really partitioned to that area of the world, sending it to a completely different environment about, you know, 5,000 miles away in the Indian, from the Indian Ocean to the Gulf of the Arabian Gulf. And, you know, they have to transfer with that Abe Lincoln. And that means we have zero carriers in the Pacific right now, which is dangerous. But by the way, I'll point out that if you go back to the national security strategy and the national defense strategy, both of those say our number one priority is a shift to Asia, a pivot to Asia, if you will, a focus on China. And yet we're depleting all the resources away from a place where President Trump said we never wanted to do another forever war.
That's exactly right. I actually looked through the national security strategy, the most recent one, the Trump second Trump term one. The phrase North Korea does not appear.
Right.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I think it's kind of weird.
A bunch of other presidents called it as part of the axis of evil.
Yeah, that was a bipartisan thing. I mean, they don't like us. It's pretty clear. Yeah. We have just a couple of minutes left here. We should talk a little bit more about following up on the story from the USS Abraham Lincoln. We, on the last episode of Command Post, we pointed out that the president had not been there and was really dismissive of the issue. The Secretary of Defense was dismissive of the issue. The Secretary of the Navy went and talked to the acting Secretary of the Navy, I should say, went and talked to the families in San Diego, but was also kind of dismissive. So finally, we got the CENTCOM commander, Admiral Brad Cooper, who visited the ship and posted on the CENTCOM Twitter page, of course, because this is how our government communicates now. You can go find this on their Twitter page. I'll just summarize and say that he visited. We should all be very proud of the sailors on board. They're a great team. The thing that he really wanted to emphasize was this. I thought this was interesting. Of the U.S. Navy's 11 active aircraft carriers, the Lincoln currently has among the lowest number of cases related to mental health, he said. So the others are worse, is what I take from that.
Yeah, right. He did not get very good advice from his public affairs officer in terms of whoever wrote that statement for him. That has some issues. And again, I never want to question an active commander, but this visit to the Lincoln was part of a 10-day trip around the region. He said that specifically. I don't know how long he spent on the Lincoln. He released some film clips of him talking to sailors. I'm sure he got, as any four-star general or admiral would get when they visited the troops. There is, and I will say this publicly, there is always an intimidation factor that goes on when a four-star enters the room. And so are sailors going to give the true case? Is he going to look around? Is he going to go into the toilets and the bathrooms and the mess? I'm sure he will or did. And he said afterwards that a lot of this is blown out of proportion and many of the issues have been fixed. But Ben, what I would say, having been in this kind of situation before, the reports of these situations, the morale issues on the Lincoln and the rest of the ships in that strike group have been bubbling up, not to use a naval term, for the last 4 months. The first reports came out at the end of March about some of these problems. It's now August the 17th, and this is the week when, last week is when Acting Secretary Chow went to San Diego. This is the week that the Admiral goes to the ship. I mean, truthfully, I'm not second guessing what they're doing, but in most military operations, if you started hearing about these kind of things on the ships in your command, you would send the inspector general and a bunch of command master chiefs, or at least I would, to find out what the hell is going on and how do we fix it. If there's no means to fix, then you let the families know, hey, conditions are tough. Visit the sailors, give some kind of morale issue. But the stories continue to bubble up. And even with that, I'll say one more thing. You've got civilian leadership in the president and the secretary of defense as recently as last week, basically saying the equivalent, this is no big deal. It's fake news. Mm-hmm. That's the part that's problematic.
Yeah, and that puts that puts Admiral Cooper in a difficult position where he can't exactly say my bosses are lying, but he's got to acknowledge the truth a little bit. We have one last question. I think it's the perfect one to end on. This is from Grace. She asks, is there anything the average person can do to help the sailors on the Lincoln or their families? I got one theory. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, one thing you can do is contact your congressmen and senators and say, is Congress looking into this? These are people who are in the armed services, especially if you have a member who is a veteran or is on the armed services committee. You can say, are you looking into this? Is Congress asking the Navy? Is Congress asking the Defense Department? What are they doing about it? Is Congress doing oversight? Or, as with every other story we've discussed today, is it likely that Congress is going to say, we're going to send a strongly worded letter? Or, we're not going to comment on this or whatever. What's Congress going to do about it? They're part of the government. That's my answer.
Yeah. Yeah. And Ben, that answer is a good one because it's prudent. You're not saying that you assume that everything that's being reported is exactly right and conditions are horrible and people are jumping off the ship and committing suicide. We don't know that for sure. There are indicators that not good things are happening. So asking your congressman, look into it. I'm surprised there has not been an investigation or at least an oversight hearing on this. And that may be because of what past oversight hearings have shown in terms of the secretary not answering very directly. With a note like that, though, from Grace, I think what she's also asking is there a way we can send toothpaste and soap and, you know, deodorant? There really isn't in this kind of situation. I mean, care packages are great, but when you don't have a way to get them there, it just causes a backlog of mail. And, you know, the ships are trying to get needed supplies right away. So care packages won't do it. But in normal times, for deployed soldiers, there's an organization called Operation Gratitude, which you can contribute to, that's, or the USO or any number of nonprofits that support those who are deployed. So, those are options, but not the Lincoln Battle Group. They're just looking to get out of there and get home.
General, I think it's a great note on which to end. Thank you for joining me for another Command Post.
You're very welcome, Ben. Thank you.